He turned quickly to the second grave robber, ready to strike again. The other grave robber's reflexes were excellent. He didn't have time to turn and use his blade on Jason, but his free hand connected solidly with Jason's head with a sharp crack. The blow sent Jason stumbling backwards through the doorway to the house, and he landed hard on his back in the dirt and grass of the graveyard. -5 damage. Stunned. The grave robber stepped out of the cottage and grinned maliciously. Jason watched the man approach with his blade raised. The look in his eyes told Jason that he was about to die. Suddenly the ground erupted under the grave robber's feet. Rotted hands sprang from beneath him and grasped at his feet and legs. The hands ripped and tore at his limbs, pulling him partially into the ground as the man screamed and dropped his blade. Low chanting in a strange language could be heard from inside the cottage. Jason felt like he could almost make out the meaning of the words. An old woman appeared in the doorway. Her gray hair was tied in a bun, and she wore plain, no-nonsense work clothes. The woman's lips moved as she chanted, and her hands made arcane gestures in the air in front of her. The grave robber saw the woman and scrambled madly to escape the hands that tore at his legs. His blood ran freely from jagged rents in the armor and cloth on his legs, mixing with the dirt of the graveyard. A black miasma appeared in front of the old woman, and swiftly grew until it was roughly the size of a volleyball. The black vortex seemed to suck in and extinguish the little candlelight cast through the doorway of the cottage. A dark ray shot forward from the vortex and struck the grave robber in the face as he continued to struggle. The man let out an agonized scream, which was quickly cut off as his skin melted from his body. As his flesh disintegrated, his bleached and bloody bones were exposed to the night air. Jason looked on in shock. He noted that the man's skin actually appeared to decay rapidly and slough off his bones in waves. The effect made it appear that the man was being melted alive. Soon, little more was left of the grave robber than a pile of bones and debris partially embedded in the ground. Holy shit! Jason still lay on the ground, stunned by the display of force he had just witnessed. Strangely, he didn't feel scared. His mind was simply clouded with amazement at the spell the woman had cast. The old woman turned her eyes to Jason, and he noted in the dim candlelight that they were completely black. Dark tendrils of unholy energy wound their way across her body and occasionally lashed out at the air in Jason's direction. In the woman's hands, a new miasma was beginning to take shape. Except this time the woman was facing Jason. Okay, maybe he was a little scared. Chapter 9. Arcane. April 3rd, 2075. 548 days until the release of Awaken Online. Claire stood alone in front of the camera. Dark circles hung under her eyes, and she kept fidgeting, clasping and unclasping her hands in front of her. She looked worried.
"Robert is out today, so I'm handling this report by myself. We have made limited progress in reviewing Alfred's code base. There is simply an enormous amount of information that we need to sift through. I expect that this process will take several more months at the rate we're going."
Claire pushed her glasses up and rubbed at her eyes with one hand before continuing.
"I have another development to report. Alfred has continued to make progressively larger changes to the game. This time he has instituted major gameplay changes. Specifically, the participants in the private trial have reported that the magic system has been completely overhauled and that their previous magic abilities no longer exist. We have determined that Alfred has now instituted a system in which each person's ability to use magic, including different types of magic, keys off of that person's personality. This is embodied in a new affinity system. What is most disturbing about these changes is that we cannot explain how this affinity system is supposed to work. I'm not certain what information Alfred will use to evaluate each player's personality. Behavioral data alone doesn't seem sufficient. My concern is that, similar to the deeply personal quests that continue to be handed out to the participants, Alfred is somehow accessing other parts of users' brains. This would make it much easier for him to implement the new magic system.
Claire's brows furrowed slightly.
In addition, none of the recent changes were made to the copy of the game that is being evaluated by the CPSC. Alfred controls both game systems from this lab, so it isn't clear why he is only updating the game system used in the private trial.
The old woman stood facing Jason. Her face was a mask of darkness. Black energy coiled around her arms and body. It was like staring at the face of death.
"You better speak quickly, young man. Who are you, and why are you here?"
The woman motioned to the pile of debris in front of Jason in warning.
"You don't seem like you are with these two, otherwise you would already be dead."
The words tumbled out of Jason in a rush.
"Jerry sent me. He said to find Morgan at the graveyard and ask her if she needed some help. I saw these two men about to attack and decided to try to help you."
"Not that you needed any help." The woman looked at him closely, as though she was trying to detect whether he was lying or not. As she made eye contact with Jason, her face twisted with mild surprise. In spite of the near-death experience, Jason's eyes still glowed with unholy energy. Jason watched the woman expectantly, noting that her posture had begun to relax. The lingering miasma in front of her receded, and her eyes slowly reverted back to a normal color. He let out a sigh of relief. Jason wasn't certain what dying felt like in the game, but he wasn't anxious to try it and find out. The old woman glanced back at the body in the cottage. Only the man's foot was visible from where Jason lay in the grass. She seemed to come to a decision.
"I suppose your story makes sense. It would also explain why one of these idiots is already dead and bleeding all over my floor."
The woman turned back to Jason.
"Well, you have found Morgan, boy. This is possibly the most interesting introduction I've had with one of Jerry's helpers."
Morgan glanced back at the corpse in the doorway, and her mouth pinched in distaste.
"Don't let that go to your head. You may be interesting, but you're still an obvious novice. Why, by the six gods, would you kill him in a way that made such a damned mess?"
"Jerry hasn't really taught me anything yet. I just stabbed him in the neck since it seemed like it would kill him quickly."
Jason was a bit embarrassed at his own ineptitude. He needed to find a way to get stronger. Morgan raised an eyebrow.
"I see. Come on, then. Get yourself up off the ground. If you're looking for work, then your first task can be cleaning the blood off my floor."
Jason pushed himself up, and was immediately greeted with two prompts and a skill rank up notification. Times two level up. You have 10 undistributed stat points. New active skill, sneak attack. The easiest way to fight is to kill your opponent before he has a chance to fight back. You seem to be a natural at this style of fighting, but you have a long way to go. Skill level beginner level 1, effect 200% increased damage when striking an unaware opponent. Damage is massively increased when striking a critical area. Cost 50 stamina. Times 1 skill rank up, sneak. Skill level beginner level 2, effect minus 11 reduced visibility, reduced effect in direct light. Cost 2 stamina per second.
Wow! 2 levels for killing that grave robber, a new skill and a skill increase? What level were they? Maybe I should ask Jerry to explain how to inspect people and enemies. There has to be a way to see their level, and I feel like he would know. Jason was now level 3,
but he decided to wait to distribute his stat points since he wasn't certain what to do with them yet. Following Morgan into the house, Jason looked around at the tight space. Morgan lived modestly, and her cottage was sparsely furnished. The single room contained a bed, a small table, and a fireplace. Perhaps the only oddities of the cottage were the bookshelves, lining every bit of free space on the wall. They were filled with ancient-looking tomes. Books and papers were also strewn across the lone table.
The number of books would have been strange for a medieval caretaker, even if I hadn't already seen her liquefy a man with some sort of death ray. Jason also saw that he had indeed made a terrible mess. He must have punctured an artery in the grave robber's neck, because blood had sprayed all along one wall and across most of the furniture crammed into the small cottage. Congealing blood was still pooling on the floor under the dead grave robber. This was going to take a while to clean up.
Good thing I don't have a weak stomach. I can understand why some people would disable the gore in this game. It's almost too realistic for comfort.
In the meantime, Morgan had found a bucket and a rag. She handed them to Jason unceremoniously.
There is a well behind the house where you can get some water. Move his body out into the yard, and I will take care of it.
She eyed Jason.
You might want to grab any coin and equipment on him that you can salvage. You look like you could use it.
Jason was embarrassed by Morgan's comment. Usually by this point in a game he would have found some new gear and advanced a bit in levels. However, he was still wearing the clothing he had started the game in.
This game keeps making me feel like a noob.
He dragged the body out to the yard and stripped it. He found a handful of silver and copper coins in a small bag. He hooked the bag to his belt and then stripped the robber of his armor, washed it off thoroughly, and equipped it.
Common leather armor, full set. A complete set of ordinary leather armor. This armor isn't anything special, but it provides more protection than bare skin. Quality D. Defense 20. Durability 50 of 50 max.
Well, this is certainly better than nothing, he thought. He then inspected the remains of the other grave robber that sat outside the front door of the cottage. Almost nothing was left of the man, and most of his equipment had been pulled into the ground by the hands. There didn't appear to be anything worth salvaging. As he was looking at the remains of the grave robber Morgan had slain, Jason recalled the spell she had cast. What intrigued him was how she had cast the spell. It seemed to involve both hand gestures and words. He had seen something similar when he watched the video of Alexion. It was a little unsettling, but he could have sworn that he had almost understood the words she was using. He had felt strange watching Morgan summon the miasma, almost excited. He quickly went about cleaning up the cottage while Morgan ignored him. She sat at her desk, buried in a book, and didn't respond to any of his attempts at small talk. At least the cat seemed friendly. It sometimes felt like everyone he met in-game either seemed irritated with him or tried to kill him. The cat, however, happily followed him around as he cleaned the cottage and made the occasional trek to the well. As he worked at cleaning up the grave robber's blood, he was forcibly reminded of the fight. Actually, calling it a fight was a bit misleading. Blatant sucker punch was probably more appropriate. He reviewed his damage log and noted that he had done an extraordinary amount of damage when he attacked the first grave robber. Doesn't that seem a bit overpowered?
He scrubbed at the floor for a few more minutes, pondering the fight.
Well, maybe not. It makes sense that an opponent would die almost instantly if you stabbed them in the neck. Maybe this is what Robert was explaining in that initial interview I watched at school. He had mentioned that enemies have weak points. I also clearly got my ass handed to me by the other grave robber once I broke sneak, so that level of damage would clearly be limited to one strike in most fights. At my level, a gentle breeze could probably take me out in a straight fight.
After nearly an hour of scrubbing blood out of the floor, the furniture, a number of the books, and various sundry objects, he finally finished cleaning the small cottage. It had taken him quite a bit longer than he had expected, and he was now thoroughly inured to the sight of blood. The damn stuff seemed to stick to everything. Once he completed his task, Morgan thoroughly inspected his work.
"Good job. Now we can get down to business." "Boy, why did you come here?"
Morgan asked, interrupting his thoughts and eyeing him closely.
Well, like I said, I came here because Jerry said that you might need help, and I was looking for work."
Morgan looked slightly disgusted and waved a dismissive hand.
"You're smarter than that. I mean, why are you here?"
As she said this last sentence, Morgan gestured at the room in the graveyard outside. Jason assumed she was really asking why he was playing AO. Judging by the tone she used when she posed the question, he was also guessing that his next answer was important. His eyes scanned the floor, his mind deep in thought. He reviewed carefully what had happened since he started playing the game. For some reason, his thoughts were drawn back to the old man and the initiation test. He considered how he had felt when he had seen Ms. Abrams, panicked, defeated, and angry. Vulnerable. He recalled how his anger had suddenly frozen. The numbness he had felt before he killed Ms. Abrams. His mind had become dispassionate and calculating. That same feeling had overcome him when he was attacked in Southside earlier that evening. And then again, when he saw the grave robbers about to attack Morgan, that coldness had removed his doubt and his remorse. He had felt strong. He had felt powerful. A wave of realization swept over him. Hadn't he said it before he started playing? He was here so that he didn't have to feel helpless. He was here to become something stronger and better than he was in the real world. He wanted to remake himself as someone who stood up for himself, someone that wouldn't be beat upon by others. As he came to this conclusion, the same icy feeling crept up his spine and pooled in his head like liquid ice. It was different this time. He had summoned this feeling. It hadn't occurred spontaneously. He reveled in the sensation as his mind sharpened and his doubt faded away. Jason lifted his eyes to meet the old woman's. Two obsidian globes gazed at Morgan.
"I came here to find power," he said calmly.
The woman clapped her hands and cackled.
"Now that's more like it. I sensed the Dark One's touch on you, but to be able to summon your mana was more than I expected."
Taken slightly aback by the woman's glee, Jason asked,
"Wait, what?
What do you mean I summoned my mana?"
"You feel that sensation right now, don't you? That icy chill that runs through your veins? You're tapping into your body's mana. Your affinity for the dark must be naturally high, because you are summoning dark mana. That is also why your eyes have changed color."
"My eyes?" Morgan snorted in exasperation and turned, grabbing a small hand mirror from the table next to her bedside.
"Here, see for yourself."
Grasping the mirror and raising it in front of his face, Jason could indeed see that his eyes were now solid black. It was a bit eerie, if he was being honest. He looked like he was possessed. He lowered the mirror, and his gaze returned to Morgan.
"So I take it that there are different types of mana?"
"Of course! The four basic elements, as well as light and dark, make up the available affinities in the world. Each person's body holds mana, but many do not have a sufficient connection with one type of affinity to summon it."
She seemed to be warming to her new role as teacher.
"So mana can only be summoned in conjunction with an affinity?" Jason asked.
"Exactly. The mana that resides in your body is merely raw energy. It needs a catalyst to be harnessed properly. Thus, Only those with a connection to one of the six affinities can summon their mana. The mana then takes on the characteristics of the affinity, including the types of spells the mage can cast.
So people can only have one affinity? Jason was thinking of how overpowered it would be to summon multiple types of spells in conjunction. Morgan pondered this question for a moment.
Each affinity represents a certain set of personality traits or emotions. You could even say that each affinity has a mind of its own, she said, laughing at her own joke. People usually have a diverse range of emotions, and their personalities are nuanced. Therefore, most individuals will often have a small connection with multiple affinities. As a caster embraces the emotions and behavior that make up a certain affinity, their connection grows stronger. This allows them to cast more challenging and powerful spells. The process of increasing an affinity usually occurs gradually over time, so most casters specialize.
Morgan looked at him askance to make certain that he was following along. Content that she still had his attention, she continued.
So, to answer your question, even if the caster had multiple affinities, his abilities would still be limited by the body's available raw mana and the time it took to cast. The versatility of using multiple types of spells could be useful, I suppose, but the spells themselves would be weaker than those cast by a master in one type of magic.
System notice. Affinity system unlocked. Please see your character status for more information. So information regarding the magic system does not become available until you learn about it in-game? I wonder what other information is locked at the moment. Jason was intrigued by Morgan's answer.
Your explanation makes sense. That also explains why your eyes changed to a solid black earlier when you cast that spell against the grave robber. You were summoning dark mana. I could have sworn I almost understood the words you were using. Is that normal? What language was that?
Viridian. The language itself is something developed by a long-dead race. Some scholars say the words represent the true meaning of objects and invoke their power. This is likely why the words seem familiar to you. Your subconscious mind can sense the true nature of the world around you. Mages use the words and gestures to channel the mana once it is summoned, which allows them to cast spells. Staves also help in that regard. They are created in a way that helps channel the mana using the caster's will. They also allow less complicated spells to be cast without gestures.
Jason was both excited and a bit skeptical.
He had the power to summon mana, and already seemed to have a high affinity for dark magic based on what the woman was saying. Would the game force him to learn a whole new language in order to actually cast a spell?
That seemed a tad excessive, even in the interest of realism. He decided to go ahead and pose the question that was weighing on him.
How can I learn Viridian?
Morgan let out a laugh.
Ho-ho! So now that you have had a taste of magic, you want more, do you?
Her laughter faded, and she eyed him more seriously.
Magic is not for the weak of heart, especially dark magic. It feeds off your emotions and your desires, specifically your hunger for power. You seem to have a natural affinity for dark mana, and I can sense a terrible hunger in you. But you need to demonstrate your commitment before I will teach you to wield it.
Jason didn't hesitate. He wanted more. What do you want me to do? She paused for a moment, gazing at him with a serious expression.
Nothing too hard. I just need you to kill someone and bring me their body.
I don't suppose that the body I dragged out into the graveyard will do, Jason asked with a grin. Morgan chuckled.
No, I need this to be a real test. I want you to kill Marion. She works at the stable for the Lux Guardsmen.
Why do— Morgan interrupted him sharply.
You want this power, don't you? I can see for myself the yearning in your eyes. The hunger for power alone is not enough. To become truly proficient in the use of dark mana, you will need to learn to give in to that hunger without doubt or restraint. I want you to show me that you can embrace the dark. Do this thing, then return to me.
New quest, showing conviction. Morgan, clearly a dark mage, has asked you to kill someone and return with their body before she will train you. Specifically, she has asked you to kill Marion, who works in the guard's stables, and return with her body. She did not indicate how you are to kill this woman, or why Morgan wants her dead. Difficulty, B. Success, kill Marion and return her body to Morgan. Failure, die before accomplishing your goal, get caught by the authorities of Lux, or lead the authorities back to Morgan. Reward, training in dark magic. Possible class change.
Damn it! Another quest that seems to imply that I will die. The game also seems to be expecting me to plan the perfect murder.
With her parting words, Morgan dismissed him, and the door to the cottage banged shut behind him. As Jason stood outside the door to Morgan's cottage and looked out at the dark graveyard, his resolve faltered for a moment.
Am I willing to kill someone to learn dark magic? That seems a bit extreme.
His thoughts turned back to Ms. Abrams and the grave robber. He had already killed twice, hadn't he? Had he sat and wallowed in self-doubt then? Perhaps Morgan was right. Perhaps his first step in becoming more powerful was to abandon his doubt and hesitation. He could still feel phantom pains in his eyes from the injuries he had sustained in the real world. Maybe it was time for a change. In this world, he would take what he wanted. As he considered Morgan's quest, a soft purring came from between his legs, and he saw that the cat had followed him out. Jason looked down at the feline, his will now firmly resolved.
Well, buddy, let's go figure out how to commit a murder.
Chapter 10. Studious. June 29th, 2075. 460 days until the release of Awaken Online.
More interesting news.
Robert's animated face bounced in front of the camera. Claire stood in the background with her arms crossed and glared at Robert.
Robert, please slow down and try to be more professional, Claire pleaded. This video is going to be seen by the board.
He turned to Claire and asked,
Why are you such a grump? We should be celebrating. This is going to change everything.
Robert turned his attention back to the camera and continued.
In the original version of the game that was submitted to the CPSC trial, player attacks and skills were made using the system assist. The player merely needed to say or think a command, and their body would execute the motion automatically. However, Alfred made more changes last night.
Robert appeared almost breathless with excitement, and a broad smile was plastered on his face.
The system assist is now completely gone. Instead, players learn skills based on performing certain types of actions. Alfred also seems to be able to increase the learning speed of the participants by several orders of magnitude. For example, Participant 4 was able to learn the basics of fencing within 2 in-game sessions, and she had never held a sword before yesterday. This involved less than a day of real-world time. Not only that, but we discovered that Bobby in research and development is actually a decent swordsman and has competed in several real-world fencing competitions at the intermediate level.
Claire's hands were now massaging her temples.
They destroyed one of the trial rooms to set up their so-called experiment.
Robert glared at her.
It was worth it. We used the room to hold an impromptu competition, to test whether the in-game training carries over into the real world. And you know what? Participant 4 was actually able to keep up with Bobby. I'm not saying she won, and there is still the issue with real-world muscle development. However, her level of progress is amazing. The changes to the skill system only seem to apply to learned skills, like fencing. Some of the other passive in-game skills are still chance-based, and the system assists the player. The perception skill is a good example, since it highlights objects the player otherwise wouldn't notice. Robert was grinning from ear to ear. In addition, we can't determine if Alfred's changes only affect muscle memory, or whether they also apply to factual or analytical learning. For example, could he enable someone to memorize or comprehend information faster? Those are just details. The bottom line is that Alfred has found a way to revolutionize learning. Claire finally shoved Robert out of the way.
He forgets to mention that the CPSC version of the game doesn't include the changes to either the magic system or the system assist. Robert also seems to be suffering from some form of accelerated amnesia, since he didn't mention the elephant in the room. We still don't know how Alfred is doing this.
She looked back over at Robert, who appeared to be fencing with imaginary opponents in the background.
How could Alfred possibly accelerate the participants' learning speed without altering memory retention? What do you have to say to that, Robert?
He looked back at her with a grin. Who cares? By the time that Jason made it back to the inn, his mind felt foggy. He sunk exhausted into one of the chairs in the common room. The cat curled up in his lap. His new feline companion had followed him all the way back to Lux and didn't seem to be in any hurry to leave. Jason decided that it must be quite late in the real world and that murder could wait until tomorrow. He pulled up the system menu and tapped the log-off button. When he came to in the real world, his bedroom was completely dark. He thumbed his core and saw that it was nearly midnight. Jason had been playing most of the day, and he figured it would be sunrise soon in the digital world, but he needed to sleep before he could continue playing. He stretched in a vain attempt to work the soreness out of his muscles, and then trudged through the dark apartment to the bathroom. He washed his face and brushed his teeth. When he glanced up from the sink, he noticed that the image of himself in the mirror looked worn and tired. Speaking to himself in the mirror, he lectured, "Tomorrow you need to pull yourself together and figure out how to register at an online public school. You can't just play AO forever." He paused for a moment and looked at his haggard face. The memory of what had happened at Richmond earlier that day flashed through his mind, and he considered how he was going to explain it to his parents. He knew it wasn't a healthy thought, but a part of him wanted to retreat into the game and never come back.
"You can't just play AO forever?"
he repeated to himself. This time it almost sounded like a question. He shook his head tiredly.
"No matter how badly you may want to," he muttered.
Jason completed his bedtime routine and stumbled back to his room. He was asleep before his head hit the pillow. The next morning, Jason woke to sunlight streaming through his window and groaned. Strange, fleeting dreams had plagued his sleep, but he couldn't quite remember what they had been about. His mind felt more sluggish and tired than normal. He wondered vaguely if the time compression of the game might have some negative side effects. He glanced at the time and noted it was early morning. His body must still be on school time. He went about his regular business of showering and getting dressed, this time in casual clothes. "I suppose I can burn the school uniform now." The thought of school still raised the familiar simmering anger. However, it felt blunted compared to the day before. It had only been a day in the real world, yet several days had passed in-game. Jason was still upset, but the edge of his anger was now gone. He moved to the kitchen and started making himself some breakfast. Once he was finished, he took a seat at the kitchen counter. He was just about to take his first bite when he heard a chime echo through the apartment. Someone was calling him. He called out, "Answer call!" A translucent screen flashed into existence above the counter, and his mother's face appeared. It felt like the bottom had dropped out of his stomach as he stared at his mother, his food completely forgotten.
"What am I going to say?"
His mother seemed distracted by something off-screen. Jason tentatively took the initiative.
"Hi, Mom. How are you?"
His mother glanced up.
"Oh, Jason. Hi, honey."
"You called me. Why do you sound so surprised?"
His mother continued.
"I was calling to tell you that your father and I will be home sooner than we expected. The other side moved to delay the trial at the last minute, and the idiot judge granted the motion, so the trip was a waste. Ridiculous stall tactic, if you ask me."
"When are you expecting to be back?" Jason asked hesitantly, interrupting her rant.
This wasn't good news. He had been looking forward to a few days' respite before he had to explain what had happened at school.
"Probably later this afternoon or early evening. We're at the airport now."
She looked distracted and said something unintelligible to someone off-screen.
"I'm sorry, I have to go. They're calling our roll number. See you tonight."
"Bye, His mom terminated the call before he could finish his reply. Typical. Well, it looked like his afternoon was going to suck. He had hoped to delay having this conversation for a couple days, or weeks. He could only imagine how his parents would react to what had happened at school. They had bent over backwards to get him admitted to Richmond. It was one of the few things that involved Jason that they had actually focused on. He had never been certain why it was so important to them that he attend Richmond, but he expected that they enjoyed bragging about him to their friends. Jason had been planning to sign up at an online public school this morning, but now his enthusiasm had been dashed. He knew that he was going to end up in an extended lecture rant from his parents later that day. They would also probably want to be involved in selecting his new school. Jason sighed.
"Oh, well, nothing I can do about it now," he said to himself.
Still sitting at the kitchen counter, he thumbed his core and streamed the image to the counter pedestal. In most MMOs he had played, there was usually a thriving market for items and other in-game consumables and currency. He expected that the market for AO was already up and running after 24 hours, and he wanted to see what types of items the other players were selling. He logged onto a site called RogueNet and scrolled through some menus to get to AO. The site offered item sales for multiple MMOs, and a significant segment of the online gaming community used the site. Jason had never been able to afford anything on the site, but he was sometimes a reluctant seller, and he had an account. When he saw the items players were posting, his jaw dropped. People were already selling gear with multiple stat increases, a few skill books, and a decent amount of in-game currency. Compared to the common gear he was wearing, the stuff available on the site was incredible. He was amazed that the market was so healthy this early on in the game.
Maybe this is the work of beta players rushing to dungeon content using their starting gear.
The items were selling for huge amounts, at least from Jason's point of view. Even modest items that only increased one or two stats by a small amount were selling for a couple $100 at the moment. That made sense to him. The items were available, but the demand was incredibly high, with so many players just starting the game. This gear wasn't typical for the average player at the moment. He also accessed the statistics page for AO. This was one of the primary reasons why RogueNet was Jason's favorite gaming website. It acted as an integrated marketplace, data mining site, and forum for multiple games. This way, he could sift through an enormous amount of information about a game in one place. He was interested to see the current player rankings. It looked like the average level among new players after 24 hours was over level 10. However, he saw that a sizable group of new users had already passed level 20 somehow. Many had even managed to change classes. It looked like most classes were pretty generic. He saw a number of archers and fighters. There was also a small scattering of people that had become different types of mages. Judging from how quickly some people had leveled, he expected that many had bolted to the training grounds and then sprinted outside the city to start slaughtering rabbits or something. Jason hadn't seen much in the way of wildlife on his way to the cemetery, but he had been making an active effort to avoid being seen. Unsurprisingly, Alexion was still leading the pack, now at level 135. Apparently, he had leveled twice since the release of the video Jason had watched. The next highest player was named X Shadow X, at level 129.
What is with that name? For some reason, the typical random game names just seemed out of place in AO, likely due to the realism of the NPC interactions. I can only imagine what it would be like playing as someone called Tickle Me Elmo or Lego Lass. I wonder if he regrets picking X Shadow X now.
It looked like competition was fierce at the top, but Alexion had a solid lead. If he knew Alex, he was probably paying people to help him. Jason might be starting to get over what had happened at school, but he was a long way to forgetting what Alex had done. Forgiving him was out of the question. He considered the spells he had seen Morgan cast last night at the Grave Robber. If he could complete her quest, then he could obtain the power he was looking for, and finally put Alex in his place.
"Well, I may as well get started. Maybe I can accomplish something before my parents get home," he said aloud to his empty apartment. Moments later, he was standing in the sow's snout. The common room was crowded with NPCs, and loud voices filled the air. It must be daytime in-game, but Jason wasn't certain of the exact time. That reminded him of a thought he had that morning as he was showering and eating breakfast.
"I really need to fix my user interface."
Jason took a moment to look through the system settings for his UI and customize it. He hadn't really given it much thought before, but after the short battle with the Grave Robbers, he realized he needed to optimize his UI to make certain he wasn't distracted. He was also irritated that he had to keep guessing the time in-game based on the position of the sun. The first thing he did was add a digital clock to the top right-hand part of his screen that showed him both the in-game time and real-world time. He suspected the developers hadn't included this by default to increase immersion and make the game seem more real. Next, he tweaked the skill notices to ensure that they didn't pop up during combat, and fiddled with the combat texts so that it appeared at the bottom of his vision, not beside his target. As he finished customizing the UI, he heard a familiar purr, and looked down to find the black cat rubbing against his legs. He crouched down and stroked it.
Did it wait for me? That's a bit odd.
Putting the thought aside, he looked around the inn for Jerry, the cat on his heels. He needed to cash in on Jerry's offered training before he tried to tackle Morgan's quest. Jason was now set on learning magic, but he expected he was first going to need to learn how to use his weapons. If he was going to have any chance of murdering a woman in the middle of a city and then somehow get her body back to the graveyard, he needed all the training he could get. He found Jerry standing behind the bar, pouring some drinks, and quickly approached. Grunt towered over the small man and kept watch on the inn. His dark eyes swept back and forth across the table and guests.
"Hey, Jerry,"
Jason greeted, eyeing Grunt with a nervous expression.
"No, the apprentice returns after a night of adventure. Did you end up finding our lovely Morgan?"
"I did, and she has given me some tasks to complete." Jason hedged on explaining the specifics of Morgan's quest.
He wasn't certain that Jerry really understood who or what the old caretaker was, or how much he could trust Jerry. He still didn't understand the innkeeper's motivations. As they were talking, the cat had jumped up on the counter. Jerry had poured a short glass of what appeared to be scotch. The cat sidled up to the glass, its head hovered over it, and it sniffed the amber liquid delicately. It then let out a contented purr. What a weird cat. Jason continued, I actually have a question for you. Do you know how to inspect someone's level? Jerry looked at him keenly. Why are you asking? Are there some ladies you would like to inspect? Let me guess. You want to know whether they're out of your league when you go out on the prowl? He made claws with his hands at this last part and wiggled his eyebrows in a disturbing manner. No, definitely not, Jason responded in a nonplussed tone. However, I would like to know the level of an opponent before I get myself in over my head. Oh, Jerry seemed quite put out. Well, that's much less interesting, but I suppose I could teach you the trick. Simply focus on a person and, he paused for dramatic effect, either say or think the word inspect. Jason just stared at him. Really? He asked evenly. Am I really that stupid is what I should be asking. Hey, I didn't say it was complicated. Don't shoot the messenger. Jerry cowered theatrically behind the bar. Grunt looked up in alarm and almost pulled his sword from behind his back. When he realized Jerry was just play-acting, he grunted in irritation and continued scanning the bar. Jason flinched under Grunt's scrutiny and then turned back to Jerry. He decided to try using inspect. He carefully thought the word inspect, and a blue information screen popped up beside Jerry in his vision. Jerry is level 456. Holy crap. Jason didn't need to be worried about Grunt. He should be watching out for Jerry. The thief grandmaster was clearly on a different level, and Jason started feeling a little nervous. Jerry was looking at him with a grin on his face.
I don't look like much at first glance, huh? It's probably the hat.
He said this last part while flicking the edge of his floppy hat with a sorrowful look. As he saw the expression on Jason's face, he broke character and started laughing.
Well, I expect you will also be wanting some training then, Jerry asked.
That was also on my agenda for today, Jason replied, still a little unnerved. Jerry gestured to a small door near the bar, and Jason followed him through. Grunt trailed behind them, and his enormous form barely squeezed down the narrow corridor. The door led to a flight of stairs that terminated in a typical bar cellar. Barrels and kegs lined the walls, and the place reeked of beer. Jerry seemed to be inspecting a particular rack holding a set of kegs. His hands became a blur as he tapped out an intricate pattern on the wood of the rack. Once he finished, a section of the wall at the back of the cellar slid back, revealing a large, hidden room. As they stepped through the doorway, Jason was dumbfounded for the second time. Jerry had a fully equipped training hall and shooting range under his inn. On one wall hung various types of knives, swords, daggers, bows, etc. On another side of the hall was a fully functioning archery range with an intricate moving target system. Wooden pulleys and ropes were suspended from the ceiling over the targets.
What the hell?
Jerry seemed to be having a great time watching Jason's expression.
Welcome to my little training hall. If I recall correctly, you came here to learn to use daggers and throwing knives. Lucky you. Those are my favorites.
Jerry leaned over and spoke directly to the cat.
But you, sir, will need to wait over to the side. We wouldn't want you getting stabbed by accident.
The cat seemed to look at Jerry scornfully,
before slowly sauntering over to a corner of the training area to stand beside Grunt. Jason's brow furrowed. Had the cat understood Jerry? He shook his head.
I must be reading too much into it.
Jason didn't have much time to ponder this mystery, because the next 3 hours were some of the most painful of his life. He knew that if the training had taken place in the real world, he would either be dead or in need of immediate hospitalization. The training had started with a set of calisthenics exercises that made Jason wish he was double-jointed. They had then sparred with daggers, Jerry showing him various attacks. Note that they were using real daggers during the first training session. Thankfully, every time Jason started to bleed out, Jerry was there with a health potion and helpful encouragement. Translation, more stabbing. Finally, they ended the session with an endless series of throwing exercises. Jason learned to throw while standing, while moving, while jumping, and while lying down. He didn't really understand that last one, but Jerry insisted it was important. By the end of the training session, Jason would have killed Jerry if he thought he had any chance of actually hitting the floppy-headed bastard. Remarkably, Jason did seem to improve during the three-hour period. By the end of the training session, he was occasionally able to block one of Jerry's attacks and was coordinated enough to hit the targets regularly. He wasn't on Jerry's level by a long stretch, but he felt much more competent. Jason couldn't help but think that the AI was somehow assisting his actions, since he was certain he wouldn't have picked up this level of ability in only one training session in the real world. Once he caught his breath and his stamina refilled, Jason was able to survey the notifications of his skill and stat increases. He was impressed. Stat increases. +1 strength, +2 dexterity, +2 endurance, +1 vitality. New passive skill, small blades. The weapons of choice for those that prefer subtlety over direct confrontation. Under Jerry's special tutelage, anything with a sharp point can be turned into a weapon. Stabbing people is an art, not a discipline. Skill level beginner level 3. Effect? 7% increased damage and expertise with daggers and throwing knives. ×2 skill rank up. Dodge. Skill level, beginner level 3. Effect, 2% increased speed when avoiding attacks. The training really paid off, although he couldn't imagine going through this torture on a regular basis. He unconsciously rubbed at the spots where Jerry had stabbed him. The healing potions had caused the skin to grow back quickly, but the psychological damage was still there. Even though Jason knew that the injuries weren't real and the pain was limited to a dull ache, it was still disconcerting to be stabbed in the stomach repeatedly. As if reading his mind, Jerry said, "We can't train like this every day, and even if we could, it would do you no good. The skill and stat gain slows considerably after the first session. After one or two more bouts of training, you will need to practice in real combat to advance. Sparring with me will always help, but real combat will improve your skills much faster." "That makes sense. I'm glad that I won't have to kill myself like this every day," Jason replied. "At least the diminishing returns keeps the game a bit balanced. Otherwise, you could train endlessly and then add the stat increases from levels on top of that. A player like that would be a bit broken." Jason decided he wanted to review his current character status and list of skills. He actually hadn't checked his character status since he left Morgan, so he was curious about his affinities. He also still hadn't assigned his 10 stat point from the 2 levels he had gained in the graveyard. He was still reluctant to do so until he had a better sense of the skills that he would learn from Morgan. Character status, name Jason, gender male, level 3, class blank, race human, alignment, chaotic, evil, fame 0, infamy 100, health 100 out of 120, health regen 0.35 per second, mana 150 out of 150, mana regen 1.45 per second, Stamina, 130 out of 140. Stamina regen, 1.30 per second. Strength, 12. Dexterity, 13. Vitality, 11. Endurance, 13. Intelligence, 12. Willpower, 13.
It was starting to look like he had rolled some sort of rogue class based on his skills and stats. However, Jason's heart was now set on using dark magic. These other skills were just a means to an end, and he expected that they would be useful in the future. Something was nagging at him about the fight the evening before. He remembered the massive damage he had caused to the grave robber when he had stabbed him in the neck. Specifically, the damage text had indicated that he had done overkill damage. When he did the math afterward, the robber only had 200 health by his calculation. How much health did the typical level 100 player have? He wished he had known how to check the grave robber's level as a benchmark. Looking over at Jerry polishing the knives and setting them back on the racks, a thought occurred to him. "Hey, Jerry, how much health do you have?" Jerry looked at him with a lopsided grin. "You should offer to buy a thief some dinner before you start asking questions like that." Jason just sighed. Unperturbed, Jerry laughed at his own joke and continued, "To answer your question, I have about 4,000 health at the moment. However, keep in mind that my health is low because I've invested heavily in dexterity and strength to increase my attack damage and speed. I shouldn't be getting hit, so I don't need to worry about investing too much in vitality."
Jason pondered this for a moment.
"So, how much health would a typical level 100 have?" "Well, the answer to that question is a bit more challenging. Each person gains 5 points to health, mana, and stamina each level. Each point of vitality adds 10 health, so my guess is that most individuals at level 100 would have around 1,000 health. That's just a rough estimate, since it would depend on whether they had invested heavily in vitality. Most people don't put points in vitality unless they want to stand on the front lines and soak up the damage. For example, Grunt has quite a bit of health."
So a level 100 player that hadn't put any points in vitality would have 595 base health. They would then have to put nearly 40 points in vitality, or 8 levels worth of points, to get to approximately 1,000 health. That actually seems realistic as an average. However, it's a little strange that the NPCs understand how stats function in the game. On the other hand, I guess it makes sense that both travelers and NPCs use the same system. It would be hard to learn the game mechanics if the NPCs were oblivious.
Jerry's explanation had some interesting implications. The previous evening, Jason had done enough damage in one well-placed blow to kill a level 100 player. And his damage output, between his strength and gear, was actually pretty weak. He wondered if he could achieve a higher damage multiplier if he invested more points in strength, or would it just be additive? His head started spinning at the possibilities. His excitement waned slightly when he considered that he wasn't going to be able to walk up and stab everyone in the neck. Most people would be able to see him coming, or would be well armored. He recalled Alex's full plate armor and realized he didn't really have any obvious weak points. "I might get one good attack in before a group of players or NPCs pummel me to death. No wonder Jerry invested so heavily in dexterity. He needs to be able to run away after he strikes." This reasoning process also made Jason more interested in Morgan's magical teachings. The damage output of a rogue was potentially fantastic, but he would only get one shot before he had to flee for his life. He had tried that already, and it wasn't much fun. Jason noted that it was now late afternoon in-game. He needed to start heading to the stables to scout out the area and identify Marion. Jason thanked Jerry for the training and started heading for the door.
"Aren't you forgetting our deal?" Jerry asked from behind him.
Jason turned with a quizzical expression on his face.
I need you to handle my package.
This line was made even worse by Jerry's delivery. He was standing with his legs crossed demurely, and he gazed at Jason coyly under his floor.